Here we go. Okay. So hello and welcome. You are listening to Research, Period, a podcast about research about menstruation. My name is Lisa Smith, and I'm your host for today's recording. We are recording virtually on Zoom via Douglas College, which is located on the unceded territories of the Kikite and Coquitlam First Nations. Even in the virtual realm, we need to continue to act in ways that move decolonization forward and further. And part of that work involves naming the internet as a physical space that occupies land on an ongoing basis. And connecting in this space really pushes us to think about that work in new ways. Today, I'm joined by Zeba Khan, Nikki Ovesi, and Olivia Stein from Free Periods Canada. Zeba, Nikki, Olivia, I'm so grateful that you were able to make time to speak with me about your research, as well as the work of Free Periods Canada. Welcome to Research Period.
Thank you for having us.
So great to chat with you all. So in order to get things started, and for the listeners to get to know a little bit about you and the work that you do, I was wondering if each of you can share a bit about yourself and how you came to be involved in advocacy related to menstrual equity. Zeba, would you like to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is Zeba, and I'm a master's candidate at UBC. I'm the founder and executive director of Free Periods Canada. I started this organization when I realized that inaccessibility to menstrual supplies is actually a global problem. I grew up in Bangladesh, and shortly after moving to Vancouver, I noticed that this issue was very prominent here as well. And I felt like I just had to do something about it. So we started this organization with the intention of promoting menstrual equity, as well as providing menstrual supplies to those who don't have access to it.
Thank you so much for sharing. And Nikki, what about yourself?
Hello, everyone. Yes, my name is Nikki, and I'm the Associate Director for Free Periods Canada. So I basically got involved with the organization shortly after Zeba founded it. At the time, we were actually a smaller club affiliated with UBC. And yeah, I joined in as the treasurer for the club. And since then, we've grown so much, and it's been a whirlwind of so many different experiences. I definitely did join, just echoing Zeba's notions, just about understanding that how important period poverty is and how much of an impact it has on our society on many levels. So yeah, that's basically my story and how I got involved.
Yeah, and the organization has grown amazingly. And Olivia, you're a more recent addition, is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you, Lisa. Yeah, so as Lisa said, my name's Olivia, and I'm a recent bachelor's in global health graduate from UBC. My interests really lie in the causes and alleviation of health inequalities, which is why I became involved in Free Periods Canada last October, and I am currently a grants and partnership coordinator.
Yeah, wonderful. And one of the things that really struck me, I was actually back on your website again today, but the work that you're doing is so it's touching on many aspects of this issue. And so I certainly get that from your website. And I'm wondering if you can share with listeners a bit about the work that Free Periods Canada engages in. But also, I'm really interested to know about what role does research play within this work that you're doing?
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, Free Periods Canada is largely youth-led, and we are a grassroots organization, and we are working in collaboration with so many different stakeholders to increase menstrual equity and decrease period poverty on a national level. This, of course, involves many collaborations, like I mentioned, distribution of products, but also, yes, as you mentioned, research does play a major role in the work that we do. And the role that it plays is we truly believe that the collection of both quantitative and qualitative evidence in this field is a major driver of change on both community and political levels. And as we are, we started at UBC and we're centered at UBC, we really believe that we can harness the resources of this research institution to execute very high quality research. And this has assisted us to mobilize the menstrual movement even further. And we predict that it will do the same in the future as well.
And to that end, like the work that you're doing is really innovative on so many levels. And I mean, I got a chance to see some of the work you were doing with your Mapping the System project as you were working through it. I mean, the scope is phenomenal and you touch on so many aspects of period poverty in that context, but also really holding that deep structural piece that needs to be changed as well, right? And I'm wondering if you can share with listeners a little bit about that project, right? Mapping the System. What kinds of things were you looking to achieve with that project, and what were some of the main goals that you sought to?
I can speak to that. So for Map the System project, it was definitely something very different that we tried. And we really wanted to understand what the relationships between various stakeholder groups looked like, and if there are any power dynamics between these groups. Like you mentioned, we have been very involved with advocacy, but we didn't actually take a step back to understand why these issues exist in the first place, and you know, what role do we play in either, you know, promoting or challenging menstrual inequities. So we ended up interviewing about 27 people with various backgrounds, that this included people that have been previously incarcerated, as well as members of the parliament trying to make changes on a policy level. The idea here was we wanted to capture all the diverse perspectives, and we wanted to look at this issue of menstrual inequality at a more macro and at a more systems level. And based on the interviews, we were able to develop a visual map highlighting the relationships between the various groups that are involved. One of the most interesting things that we found was that the two most important stakeholder groups were community members and the government. Now, of course, the government controls how resources are distributed and, you know, what policies are highlighted and implemented. But at the same time, the community members themselves, we have the power to influence legislative changes. We have the power to, you know, push for what policies need to be highlighted. So being able to look at this visual map after we created it and seeing how our collective action can impact the entire system was really empowering for us as an advocacy group.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me like the research was a key piece in realizing that relationship. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Prior to doing this research, we were just as motivated, but a lot of the way we were approaching our advocacy efforts was very one-sided. We weren't able to think about everything. We weren't able to incorporate all the different pieces. But once we took a step back and we talked to other folks and we really put all these pieces together, we were able to understand why certain things are the way they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I'm curious to know, I mean, this is always what I think about with research, but, you know, when you conclude a project, I imagine that one is still in some ways ongoing, but you know, what were you noticing as researchers? What kinds of things remained unanswered? And furthermore, what gaps did you see that you'd like to fill as scholars and researchers?
I can definitely speak on that. So the Map the System project was a very systems level analysis, but due to the dynamic nature of the system, it's constantly changing. So I definitely think that this type of project would always benefit from a refresher, especially given how menstrual equity advocacy is so fast moving nowadays and things are happening all the time. But a few gaps that we definitely saw was that we did see a lack of collaboration between stakeholders. So for example, this could cause individuals who are both working towards menstrual equity advocacy and they're planning similar events or similar advocacy routes, they are competing for the same funding and resources. So if there was more collaboration between these stakeholders, then that would decrease the competition and even increase the efficacy of the work that they're doing. We also did see a gap in terms of the lack of inclusion of voices of equity-seeking populations. So these could be groups such as refugees, menstruators who are experiencing homelessness, sex workers, trans-identifying folks and non-binary menstruators, Indigenous communities, and especially people living in rural and isolated areas. So this is very important because a lot of times these equity-seeking populations are experiencing period poverty at a higher rate. So they definitely need to be included in the research and in the advocacy in order to ensure that we are implementing person-centered approaches to all levels of the work that we're doing. Another gap that we noted was the lack of communication with non-menstruators throughout the process of advocacy. This definitely results in a reduced impact of the endeavors, as a lot of the mental models of the stigma that exists within society is also in the hands of the non-menstruators. So they need to be included in the conversation to destigmatize periods. And lastly, we did also see that, of course, funding is not very high and prevalent for research that is for women's health and more specifically menstrual health. So definitely that is a big gap, and new programs need to be explored to advocate for funding there.
Yeah, and Nikki, I hear so much richness in what you're sharing here. And it strikes me that a lot of this work that you're doing is really operating at that meta level and trying to get a sense of this as a living thing, which is what movements are, right? And I'm wondering if you can speak to a bit, you know, specifically around collaboration, because I think that touches on aspects of what you're talking about in all of those areas. Can research play a role in helping us, you know, helping collaboration take place? I don't know if you can speak to that.
I can share a little bit. I definitely think so. The way I see research, you know, the importance of research in menstrual equity movement is that, you know, ultimately, if we want to make a sustainable change, we would need to work at a policy level. So we would need to work together with decision makers. One of the questions that will eventually come up if we get to a level where we can sit down with someone who can potentially push this policy forward is there data to back up? Is there evidence, right? The more evidence that we can provide, the stronger our proposal would be. This is definitely something we ran into when we were trying to advocate for free menstrual supplies within the UBC campus. You know, everyone wanted to know, okay, like, we understand that this problem exists. Where's the evidence? Where are the numbers? How do we budget if we were to, you know, provide menstrual supplies on campus? So these are questions that will come up in the movement, and research definitely can answer a lot of these questions, bringing different groups, different stakeholder groups, the decision makers, the researchers, the activists together.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for that response. That's wonderful. I want to shift gears now and talk about some new research you're working on. So you've certainly been busy. I'm so excited to hear always about your latest projects, but you have some new research that you're working on. And Olivia, I understand that you're taking lead on this. And what can you share with us about the focal point of this new project that you're working on? What are you seeking to achieve with this project?
Yeah, so our current research project firstly explores what menstrual products post-secondary students in Canada use and what factors are involved in their product use decision. So potential answers for this could range from disposable pads with wings to reusable tampons, and potential product use reasoning ranges from habit to product reliability or making decisions based on the product's environmental impact. So we also measured within this project what barriers our sample population face to using reusable menstrual products. So reusable menstrual products are, for example, reusable tampons, period panties, reusable pads, and Diva cups, for example. So barriers to using these products, there are many that we've explored, but examples would be the high initial cost, lack of knowledge about these products, for instance, how often to replace them, if they're hygienic, and having the lack of a private place to change and clean the products.
Oh, Olivia, are you still there?
Yes. Did my connection cut?
Yeah, it did for just a second, but that's okay. It's all normal. Yeah, so that's great. Okay, so this is your current research project.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And when you think about this research, where does it fit within that broad spectrum of the movement that your group is so much aware of? So in what way do you think that findings from this study can help to inform that broader change that you're seeking?
Yeah, so as Zeba was mentioning, there is a need for data about menstruation, about menstrual product usage. So we hope that this study will help fill that gap and allow us to start dismantling some of the practical and knowledge barriers among post-secondary students to using these products. Mm-hmm. So our larger goal with this information is to enact change on a policy level to make reusable menstrual products more accessible in British Columbia. The only similar initiative to this in Canada so far was a pilot program that took place in Quebec. So in order to do so, we want to continue to work closely with different nonprofit and for-profit companies, such as how we've done with Isle for our research component. And ultimately, we hope efforts to increase usage and accessibility of these products will both benefit menstruators through having long-term access to period products and benefit our broader society due to the substantial environmental impact of reducing single-use plastics.
Yeah, no, and it's such an exciting and important piece of research. You know, I'm really interested in education, and I heard you touch on that. Like Olivia, if you had, you know, an ideal world, what kinds of changes would you see in relation to education around menstrual supplies and the kinds of things that folks use to support menstrual flow management?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is just the widespread inadequacy of teachings in elementary and high school. So I know from my personal experience, we were taught more the science of how menstruation works, and we were given like one free pad, and that was essentially it. And I think a lot of this education also doesn't come early enough, especially because there's such a wide range where women start to menstruate. So definitely putting that in a provincial curriculum and making sure that all students are able to access this knowledge would be a top priority.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And that makes me really excited. I feel like it would address so many of the issues that you highlighted early on, Zeba and Nikki. So I can see that you've got this master plan, and that really excites me. And your research excites me as well. So I'll definitely post links in the short little blog post that will accompany this recording and encourage you to check out the amazing work that Free Periods folks are doing. So as a way to close, I was wondering if each of you can share maybe something, some little thing or even a big thing that helps sustain you in moving this research forward, because it's a huge amount of work, right? Like I do a lot of research and I know how much work it is. But if you prefer to look at it another way, what keeps you going? What keeps you invested in this work? And Olivia, I'm wondering if you'd like to start.
Yeah, so I think there's kind of two prongs to what keeps me invested. So firstly, I think just being someone who menstruates myself and having those experiences and empathy towards those who don't have access to period products really helps propel me in this research. Because if you imagine people who really have very little access to products to keep them like clean and comfortable, it makes your life much more difficult than it needs to be. And this is something that our government should care about. And then secondly, working with just such a motivated, organized, and dedicated team really helps me maintain the belief that individuals can cause substantial change.
Mm. Oh, yes, 100%. You're motivating me even now. This is exciting. Nikki, I'd love to hear from you. What keeps you going?
Yeah, I think what's been keeping me going over all these years that we've been involved in this field is, I think, definitely seeing the growth, both on an internal level, like within our organization, but also just in this whole sphere of menstrual equity advocacy. Zeba and I talk about this quite a bit, that in the beginning, we kind of felt like it was just us and we were going around blind and trying to figure out what to do and what to say and who we can contact. But now I feel like there's so many more individuals involved, and just having these hubs and these spaces to be able to collaborate and use everyone's skill sets to induce change on a more systems level is very exciting for me. And I think those interactions are what keeps me going. Like this podcast, for example, just being able to interact with you, Dr. Smith, and you know, just have this back and forth and these conversations and know that, you know, this knowledge translation exists is very, very close to my heart. And yeah, that's what keeps me going.
Mm, yeah. And it's an important moment of collaboration. At least I feel it might be.
Yeah.
For sure. What about you, Zeba? What keeps you going?
Well, I want to first echo what Olivia and Nikki said, especially around, you know, being able to see the difference that our work makes. I think that itself is very rewarding. And then as well as the community that we've built around it over the last couple of years, it is really fun to work with everyone, both, you know, within our team at Free Periods Canada, as well as, you know, the folks outside, the other activists, researchers. It's very fun to work together towards a shared goal.
Mm, yeah, it truly is. And it's so exciting that you're all doing this work and that research is a part of it. That certainly excites me. But also what I hear from all of you is that it's part of that, but it's so much more. And that's what makes it a social movement.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of you for sharing just, you know, a snapshot into some of the incredible work that you're all doing. And thank you for making time for this interview. It's just been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Mm-hmm.
So as a way to close, I would like to just say thank you to Zeba. Thank you to Nikki. Thank you to Olivia for making time for this recording. And also, I'd just like to take a moment to really, truly honor the incredible work that they've been doing and the hours and hours of labor that go into not just carrying out research, but building it into the broader work of a movement. And that truly is important and meaningful work. And yeah, I think it's amazing. So that's all for today. And yeah, we hope to hear you or bring you back soon.